Great to have you with us here on the Ideas Network. Larry Mueller here. Are you dealing with a pain in your butt? That's a question we're going to take up today with our two physical therapists who are back with us. We'll talk about deep gluteal syndrome with them, among other things. Lori Tyne Brody, one of those guests, is a physical therapist, athletic trainer at UW Health Spine Physical Therapy Clinic. Lori, good to have you back.
It is great to be here, Larry. Thank you.
Jill Tyne Nissenbaum is with us as well, associate professor in the Doctor of Physical Therapy program at UW-Madison. And Jill, good to see you as well.
It's great to be here on this beautiful fall day.
Yeah, it is indeed a beautiful day. But there could be some pain out there, and we're going to talk about pain that originates in the glutes and what that could mean for you as you listen to our experts talk. We want to hear from you. Are you having a glute pain? Are you having other aches and pains? Questions for our physical therapist? I hope you'll join in. The number to call, 800-642-1234, or you can email us to ideas@wpr.org. Again, love to hear from you. Well, Jill, let's start with you. You wanted to talk about something that's getting a lot of press, for sure, deep gluteal syndrome. And I'm wondering, why is it getting this attention all of a sudden, it seems like?
That's a great question, Larry. As we talked about last month on public radio, we tried to sift through that pain in your low back or your pelvis or your hip and try and tease through, gosh, where is that pain coming from? And so I think the deep gluteal syndrome, which has recently kind of come into light, is just yet another follow-up on let's see if we can tease out different structures that are driving our pain syndrome. And interestingly, the American Medical Society for Sports Medicine, which is a group of primary care physicians who specialize in sports medicine. They have their annual conference, and every year they invite the American Physical Therapy Association or somebody from the APTA to give a talk. And the topic that they wanted to address this year was deep gluteal syndrome. So clearly it's becoming more on physicians' radars. It's becoming more on healthcare professionals' radars. We're kind of looking at this. And what it is, I'm just going to give you kind of the overarching concept. It's really an overarching umbrella term that it really encompasses many complex pain generators in our buttock area. So if you think about from the top of the bone of your gluteal muscle, kind of down to the bottom of the gluteal muscle, and then out to the side on your hip, we're talking about all the nerves, muscles, structures in that area that could be the pain generator for your patient.
And I would imagine there are quite a few muscles and pain receptors in that area.
Yes,
Laura,
there
maybe
are.
You want, go ahead, Laura.
Yeah, there are a number of suspects on that list. So historically, we have attributed butt pain to either piriformis syndrome, and many people may have been diagnosed with piriformis syndrome in the past, and certainly many of those people probably had an actual piriformis syndrome. So piriformis is one of the muscles that's deep in your butt, and your sciatic nerve passes under or through it, depending upon your anatomy. And so it can give you sciatic symptoms. So we look at pain in the butt and we say, well, maybe it's coming from your piriformis, or maybe it's coming from your low back and is just passing through your butt or being referred through your butt. But now we're beginning to understand that there are many, many other suspects in that pain generator list, including nerves and some smaller muscles, the superior and inferior gemelli. Which I like to call the flying gemelli brothers. Yeah, exactly. So there are other small nerves in the area as well, and we're becoming more aware of how they may actually be the source of pain.
Go ahead, Larry.
I was just going to ask, is it more likely to happen in men than women, or vice versa? Or
I don't think we really have enough information on that. It actually can happen anywhere across the population. So I think what's come to light is we have those patients we see, and we screen their lumbar spine, we screen their pelvis, we screen their hip, and all those things kind of clear up from a joint perspective. And I think our traditional default, as Lori alluded to, was always to say that this individual, oh, you must have piriformis syndrome. The reality of it is there's so many more other structures that need to be considered. The flying gemelli brothers, as Lori mentioned, and the obturator internus and externus are all these deep, deep, deep hip rotator muscles. And if you think about how much time we spend with the rotator cuff in the shoulder and how much attention it gets and how much press it gets and how much we need to rehab it, we don't think about the rotator muscles in the hip the same way. And perhaps we need to. Perhaps we should start thinking about how essential those rotator muscles are in the hip. Maybe they're weak. Maybe they're tight.
It's the rotator cuff of your butt.
Exactly. Exactly.
Is there a certain activity? I was just thinking about golf because I played golf yesterday with my daughter, which is certainly some rotation going on when you're swinging those clubs. Is there an activity or profession or whatever that's liable to create more problems?
I don't know if it's actually a profession. And you know, when you're swinging your golf club, a lot of that rotation comes through your trunk and your hips. Yeah. But the rotation, it's actually, if you think of it like an axle, this is more of a rotation. If your heel were planted on the ground, your foot would be spinning like from 10 o'clock to 3 o'clock, which is actually, for my patients out there who are listening, that's one of the exercises we do is the 10 o'clock to 2 o'clock with a resistive band. So I think they function a lot more as stabilizers to control rotation at your hip. What do you think, Jill?
I do. I think that's part of it. The interesting thing Larry brought up was golf. And of course, because you are swinging that club one direction the same way all the time, you do have a propensity to get tighter on one side, weaker on the other side, because you only rotate in one direction. So interestingly, for our golfers here at the UW, we do a lot of hip internal and external rotation strengthening because of that kind of power drive. And then they also need, as Lori alluded to, a lot of stabilization because the club speed and the swinging of their trunk in relation to when their hip has to go from a rotator to a stabilizer is really important.
And so how do we know if we have it? I mean, if your butt hurts, I suppose that's
well. But this is just, I think the take home message for this is there's so many structures that could be driving your pain in the butt besides your kids, for example, which is what, and I think as healthcare professionals, it's coming to shed more light in the world of physicians. There's more research on it. There's more papers written on it for physical therapists. So I think the take home message is that we can't just we need to have a very broad lens when we look at this, and we can't just pigeonhole people into, well, you have a soft tissue issue in the backside and therefore it must be piriformis. Maybe it's your gluteus medius, gluteus maximus. There's a whole lot of other things, other layers of the onion we need to peel off.
So you need, so the therapies might vary depending, or probably are going to vary.
Right. So they're going to start with a good examination. And so, you know, the area is a little bit of a no man's land. These structures are very deep below the gluteus maximus, and most people know what the gluteus maximus is. These things are below that. So for many of us, we have some subcutaneous fat there, and then you have this large muscle. So, you know, pinpointing, oh, it's this or is that, becomes really difficult. The point is, if you are treating it as primary low back pain or primary piriformis syndrome, and you are not getting better, you need to consider these other structures. And you know, the one on this list that I probably see the most is a deep gluteal tendinopathy, where at the back of the femoral head, people have a tendinopathy. And we've come to realize that after people get imaging. So we've seen it now on MRI with the advent of MRI for people who have hip pain and they go in and maybe they're looking for a labral tear or something like that, and they see this tendinopathy in the very deep gluteal muscles as they attach at the back of the femoral head.
We have callers, a caller online who has a question may relate to this. Steve and Mozani, your turn. Thank you for calling. Hi, Steve.
Hello. Good morning. Last week, Sunday, I was lifting in a bucket seat. I was restoring a car, and I was extended into the cab of the car, and I hurt my back, lower back on the right side. And that day I could feel it something, but during the night and last Monday morning, I couldn't even walk. I had to crawl on all fours. But
my goodness.
Yeah, I'm 61 years old. So Monday afternoon, I went to a chiropractor, which helped some, and I was still in a lot of pain, but it is slowly getting better. I take ibuprofen, and I'm icing the back, and I'm off work. I had 7 adjustments to date, and it just seems like the recovery is slow, but he told me to keep moving, and so I'm doing that. Is there something else I can do to help that, or any ideas?
Okay.
So it sounds to me, Steve, like you saw your chiropractor and had some adjustments done. Have you seen a physical therapist for this?
No, I haven't.
Okay.
It might be time to see a physical therapist. Is this your first episode of back pain, Steve, or do you have a history of back pain?
I never had back pain before like
okay.
that.
Okay, good for you. That's really good news. Well, I think it's probably time to see a physical therapist. It sounds like you're getting a little bit of relief from the adjustments, but a physical therapist might be able to give you some exercises, whether it's mobility exercises such as stretching, some strengthening exercises to do to look for some muscle imbalances. Physical therapists can also perform joint mobilization. So if you need some other joints mobilized, that's a good strategy. And then also talk about getting you to return to work. We didn't talk about what you did for a living, but we want to get you back to work as soon as we can, because we know the longer you're off work, the more difficult it is to go back. What do you do for a living, Steve?
Build snowplow trucks, big trucks.
Oh, geez.
Dump trucks, stuff like that.
Yeah.
It's that time of year.
Yeah. So, Steve, does the pain stay in your back?
Yes, it does, and it moves almost down to my shin on my right leg. It's always it's on the right hand side.
Yeah. That sounds like you have a little disc herniation there, a little pressure on your the nerve roots that come out there and go down your leg. Which feels better, bending forward or bending backwards?
Bending forward.
Yep.
Feels better.
Okay. Yeah. So, you said it's taking a long time. So a week, not very long at all for this kind of an injury, just to set some realistic expectations. But I think Jill is absolutely right that seeing a physical therapist and getting started on the rehabilitation program. So, you know, in my head, I can see that little disc herniation and how it's trying to heal. We need to get you moving from the bending forward activities to the bending backwards activities as your disc is healing, but getting some guidance in how to do that and in what progression and some stabilization exercises to offload that disc in your back is really important at this point in time to get you back to what you were doing.
Yeah,
and especially if you think long-term for going back to your job, which sounds like there's heavy lifting involved, it's very physical, a physical therapist can help you with body mechanics, proper movement techniques, so when you do go back to work, you're not at risk of injuring yourself.
Right, because when that disc heals, it will heal with tissue that is of lower quality than the original stuff you got when you were born. That's partly a function of age and partly a function of how connective tissue itself heals. So you want to make sure that you know the correct strategies to protect your back as you go back to the kind of heavy work that you're doing.
Good luck. Thank you so much, Steve, for calling. Appreciate your call. Lori Tyne Brody and Jill Tyne Nissenbaum, our guests today as we started talking about pains in the butt, but we're getting off into other areas as well. You can join in at 800-642-1234 or email us to ideas at WPR.org. Natalie Guyatt's our producer today. Tyler Ditter, our engineer. I'm Larry Mueller for the Ideas Network. Taking a look at physical therapy issues today with our two guests, Jill Tyne Nissenbaum, associate professor in the Doctor of Physical Therapy program at UW-Madison. Lori Tyne Brody is a physical therapist and athletic trainer at UW Health Spine Physical Therapy Clinic. Great to have them along. Questions, give a call at 800-642-1234, email to ideas at WPR.org. Nancy in Grafton, we'll go to you. Nancy, thank you for calling. What's on your mind?
Well, I made an appointment this morning to have an MRI because, I don't know, it's something in my neck, I think it is, because at about 3 o'clock in the morning, I wake up and my arm, my left arm, it feels like I've got a million nails going into my arm, and it seems to be coming off of my neck, my shoulder. So I guess they want to do an MRI now because I've been going to having some work done with chiropractic and good guy working with me, but it's not taking care of the problem. And so now they want me to have an MRI on mm-hmm. 1st of November and see if they can figure out what the problem is, because this is terrible. It wakes you up at night, and then you got to get up and sit in the chair, and oh, gosh.
It sounds bad to me. Nancy.
Yeah, did you have an injury, Nancy, to your neck?
No.
Okay. Well, it sounds like you have some arthritis or other problem in your neck that's putting pressure on your nerve roots that are going out into your arm. So have you tried adjusting your sleeping position at all? Is there any position that's more comfortable than another?
No, it just comes and it's terribly painful, and it interrupts your whole doggone day because you can't get enough sleep.
Yeah.
Right, exactly. Are you more comfortable in a recliner?
Well, I get up. Yeah, I think I am. It's better that way. But I don't know. They said something about there's a nerve in there or something
Exactly. So, you know, for your sleeping, trying to, like, for example, roll up a small towel roll and put it underneath your neck so it supports your neck during the night. You know, trying different pillows to see if different pillows help, but typically supporting your neck is important. One of the problems is that because at night you're lying still and you're not moving, it's the movement during the day that kind of helps keep things in check, but at night you're not moving. And so that's part of the problem. So either, you know, changing positions more frequently, trying the towel roll underneath your neck so that if you start out on your back or roll to your side, you still have some support under your neck, may help.
Good luck.
But have you seen a physical therapist for this yet?
That'll be the next thing after I have the MRI, I believe.
Yeah, probably.
Okay. Well, even if you saw a physical therapist prior to your MRI, they could take a look at your neck and potentially help you with some sleeping strategies based upon what they see in your neck, and when they evaluate your posture and your mobility and your arm strength and so on and so forth. They might be able to give you some suggestions to make you more comfortable while you await your MRI results.
There you go. Thank you so much for calling, Nancy. Appreciate it. Mary in Lake Geneva will give you a chance. Hi, Mary.
Hello. I have a question about what type of doctor to see or whatever. My experience was that I had butt pain that became so severe I could not bear weight on that leg. I was on crutches. And I saw 4 different physicians. I went to physical therapy. I went to chiropractor, the physical therapy exercises. were too painful to do. I was on gabapentin, and then all of a sudden, one morning, it was completely gone. At that time, I was ready. I was being referred to Madison to ortho and having an MRI of the spine. I had an MRI of the glute, but, I mean, it didn't. What I'm gathering is sometimes it's hard to define what the problem is.
Yeah.
Oh, you, Mary, you just summarized everything for us. It is very, very difficult to determine what the source of symptoms is when you have gluteal pain or butt pain. You know, the question is, as you mentioned, is it coming from your lumbar spine? Is it coming from somewhere in your pelvis, or is it coming from somewhere in your hip? And all of those are very reasonable ideas of where the pain can be coming from. And so it is very, very difficult to peel those layers of the onion off. I hear you say you saw four different physicians, and it sounds to me like they were having difficulty determining where the pain generator was. The other thing that makes this so challenging is imaging is a catch-22, because we have so many what we call incidental findings when we image people's lumbar spine, for example. So if we image my lumbar spine, Lori's lumbar spine, one of us is bound to have a herniated disc, although neither of us have back pain. And so then the question becomes, is it an incidental finding on that image, or is that truly what's driving your pain? So we know that incidental findings exist in the lumbar spine, and there's more and more literature showing that it exists in the hip as well. So it becomes very challenging.
So when you ask the question, like, what physician should I see? You know, the first thing that pops into my mind is one who listens.
Yeah.
So, you know, I mean, who will sit down and look you in the eye, who will listen to you, who will ask you questions about your symptoms, what makes it better, what makes it worse, how did it start? Importantly, you cannot rely just on the physical exam here, partly because there's so much overlap between these. And if arthritis is a piece of this puzzle that's a contributing factor, your symptoms change so much from one day to the next with arthritis. You probably all know people who have arthritis who have really great days and then other days that are just miserable. So depending upon what your symptoms are the day you go see that doctor, it may look like the primary problem is your back. And you may go to the next one, and depending upon how your symptoms are playing that day, it may look more like your hip, which is why people are enormously frustrated, because Dr. A says it's your back and Dr. B says it's your hip and the physical therapist says it's your piriformis. There's the Venn diagram overlaps a lot here and symptoms fluctuate. And so it's really frustrating for patients. And I totally hear you on that. So what we tend to do is we look at all the possible suspects and we see what we think is number one on our list. And we start treating it that way and see if you get better. And then if not, we're like, okay, let's look farther down the list here and see if we need to also address this part of the problem or that part of the problem. Does that make sense?
I was.
Now, my question is, I haven't had pain for 6 months, except I do yoga. And once in a while, different positions, I can tell where it was. I'm very active and I like to walk, I bike, I swim. As long as I'm pain-free, I can keep doing that, correct?
Absolutely, for sure. We those joints want lubrication. They want you to move. What I liked, Mary, is that you mentioned so many different things you do. So you use your muscles differently. You mentioned yoga, biking, walking, swimming. That buffet of exercise is really fantastic for you. So no, absolutely. I would put it in your rearview mirror and just keep moving forward and just keep exercising. And let's hope this bout never happens again.
I wondered if, you know, as I was just sitting here thinking, suddenly it goes away. And the first thing I thought of, well, maybe there was some muscle that was pushing on a nerve and creating the problem. And then maybe she rolled over in bed the right way and that tension went off. I mean, I mean,
it
could be any of those things.
It could be.
Yeah. Or if she had a little labral tear in her hip that was just a little displaced and then all of a sudden it goes back. Who knows?
Yeah. Who knows? Mary, thank you. I'm glad to know that it's gone for now.
Right. Exactly.
And glad to know you're doing all those exercises in so many ways. Thanks for calling. Anne in East Troy, we'll go to you. Hi, Anne.
Hi, Larry. I really enjoy your show, and I especially enjoy your contributions, Jill and Lori, when you're on. I have a question. I have a situation. I have a history of two episodes of rib fractures on the right side, one in 2007 and the last one in 2019. And about 18 months ago, a dear friend of mine came, I was standing at the kitchen sink, came up from behind, put his arms around me like a bear hug and lifted me off the floor. And I have had rib pain since. In reporting this to my doctor, I've used Aleve, ice and heat. I've had now two rounds of physical therapy, and the therapy has helped, but the pain isn't gone. I can't sit for more than 90 minutes, so it limits my time in the car and at home. And sleep can be interrupted because I have to continually change positions. My ribs now hurt on both sides. So I'm exploring, and I don't know if you have any experience or views on acupuncture, and my orthopedic decided it was slipping rib syndrome, and he eventually last week sent me to a pain doctor, and the pain doctor wants me to have the intercostal injections. And both he and the orthopedic said it would also, in addition to possibly treating the pain, it might also be diagnostic, which confuses me a little bit.
Yeah.
The pain doctor does not share the view that it's slipping ribs. So I'm just trying to map out.
Sure, what
right.
to do.
Right.
So what level of your ribs is this? Whereabouts? Do you know what rib level you're at?
As best as he could say, he thought it was 6 to 8.
Okay. And is it still on the right side where you had your fractures?
It's more on the right side, but it's both sides that hurt.
Okay.
It hurts more on the right.
Mm-hmm. Okay. All right. So has anyone looked at your thoracic spine?
Right.
I've had an MRI and an X-ray and everything looks normal.
Okay.
I'm just curious how you had two rib fractures. Right. Those are kind of unusual things to do. So how did you have those two rib fractures stepping back in?
In 2007, it was a bicycle accident. I sort of flipped over the handlebars.
Okay.
And and the second, I was playing with my son, and he was sort of on top of me, and it was too much pressure, and I could just hear sort of a cracky sound, and it hurt.
There you go.
Yeah.
Huh. So it sounds like you have some underlying susceptibility there.
Yeah.
So you know, the things that we see most often, obviously fractures, we see rib tip syndrome, but that's lower, like at the ribs 10, 11 down in there. Some instability where they attach at the sternum, like in a costochondritis kind of a thing. But you know, I have one other person right now that has sort of undescribed, you know, rib pain for unknown reasons. So the injection, so diagnostic, so that makes perfect sense to me because physicians will often do an injection as partly treatment and partly diagnosis. It happens most often at the shoulder where they'll inject the subacromial bursa. So in this case, they're going to inject in the area that you're painful. If your pain goes away, then they know that that's the source of the pain, that that's the pain generator. That's where it's coming from and not from someplace else. And then if it takes care of the problem, great. So while the pain doctor may not be convinced that that's the origin of the pain, it's not unreasonable given how long it's been going on and how it's been unresponsive to anything else for them to try the injection and see if they can identify where the pain is coming from. Thereafter, there are physical therapists who specialize in the thorax and in visceral kinds of symptoms, and that might be someone to go to. So if you've been going down the pathway of an orthopedic, this is an orthopedic musculoskeletal problem, and that's not working for you, there are physical therapists who specialize in sort of flank and viscera pain, and those can be pain generators, as well as the sympathetic chain in your thoracic spine, and that's not going to show up on an MRI.
Hmm. And I just based on your history, Anne, with having two fractures on that right side, I'm thinking about scar tissue being laid down. I'm thinking about impaired mobility there. I'm thinking about all sorts of connective tissue being tight. And I'm wondering if the viscera is pulled into that a little bit, Lori. So I agree with you on that whole idea of, boy, this injection could help from a diagnostic perspective, and make recommendations if it is indeed more of a visceral thing. So yeah, we need to get it under control.
Yeah, let us know how this turns out, Anne, just for our own information. We really appreciate some feedback.
And thank you very much for calling. Appreciate it, Anne. Well, Scott in Waukesha is up next. Scott, hi. Thank you for calling.
Hi. Thanks for taking my call. A year ago, I had severe lower back pain, and after a couple rounds of physical therapy and chiropractic, decided to go to orthopedic, and the initial x-ray showed that I had a very compromised right hip, and he says, you're going to be a candidate for a hip replacement, and he thought that possibly was the cause of my pain. An MRI actually showed I had a ruptured disc, and through physical therapy and rest and exercise, I was able to pretty much overcome that issue, and that's been fairly good. But since then, I have been getting very deep pain in my right hip when I specifically when I'm driving for 45 minutes, an hour, sitting like that in a vehicle, and I'm just thinking that maybe this hip will need to be replaced sometime in the future, but I'm hoping there's something we can do in the meantime to slow that down or to maybe help alleviate that.
All right, Laura?
Well, I think the first thing to think about is the pain in your buttock? You
it
said your pain is in your...
It seems to be in the buttocks, but it seems to be deeper, and it to me it seems like it could be in that hip socket where he showed me there is no cushion left on that right side comparing right to left. He says it's very degenerated.
And how... So my experience, and Jill, you're going to chime in next on this. My experience is that primary hip pain refers to the groin.
The groin.
It doesn't refer to the butt. Most butt pain is either a primary butt problem or referred from the back. So I'm not going with the hip just yet.
I agree. I think what would be really helpful, Scott, for you, you had a physical therapist who you said helped you through your when you had your disc issues. I think it's time to go back and see that person and say, hey, my symptoms are different now. It's more this gluteal pain with driving. I know I have degenerative changes on my plane films. Can you help me tease through what's driving this buttock pain? And just as we talked about on the top of the hour, it's so hard to tease through these things. But a physical therapist would help doing specific tests on your hip to see if that recreates your pain, on your back to see if that recreates your pain, and try a few different treatment techniques to see if you can get this under control. Because like Lori said, most true hip joint pain refers to the groin.
Right. And primary hip joint pain, if it's from hip OA, it's going to bother you when you first get out of bed in the morning. It's going to be stiff after you've been sitting anywhere, not just in a car. When you get up, it's going to be stiff and sore. After you get moving a little bit, it's going to feel better. But for the most part, you're going to feel pretty good when you're sitting. You're going to feel worse right when you get up. So that also doesn't fit with the 45-minute car ride thing.
Right.
Yeah.
So, yeah, I would follow Jill's advice there.
Scott, good luck. Thank you for calling. Roger in Grantsburg, thank you for calling. What's on your mind?
Hi, Larry. How are you doing today?
Great. Appreciate the call.
I had a comment for your gals. You two gals, you just rock. I love listening to you when you come on the show. It's like I learned so much from you two. It's just you guys rock. I had
Thank you.
You guys are just you're the queens of the pain.
Yeah, I'm going to record this, and when I'm feeling bad about myself, I'm just going to play that little piece back, Roger. Thank you. Yeah.
Well, there you go. By golly, I helped somebody out and made their day happy. I had both hips replaced. I had one done in my right one done in 2012, and I had my left one done in 2013, and it took me. They waited so long, so many years of my life. I was like 40, I think 49 when I had it done, or less than that, 47. I had when they did my right one. It was 17 years from the first MRI till I had it replaced.
Wow.
And it was like they wouldn't do it. They would not. Oh, no, well, try this, try that. And I went through physical therapy. And by the time it was done, when they did do the pictures and imaging, there was nothing left of the joint, and it had so much bone chips or whatever growing, like on your when your heels when
right.
you get to like spinal fasciitis,
osteophytes.
But how are you now?
I'm totally pain free. It was the best thing I had done. I live in Grantsburg. I had it done at St. Luke's in Duluth, Minnesota.
Yep.
The joints they put in, I don't remember the name. They're plastic on plastic. They don't have the stainless steel ball. They got the inserts, and they're just it's just phenomenal as far as the pain is. It's gone. I was a machinist for 25 years, and worked nights 23 of those. So you're on your feet all night.
Yes. Yep. And probably on cement. But you know, Roger. You had them done in your late 40s, so I can see why they put you off for 17 years. Those hip replacements don't last that long. They don't want to replace a hip in someone in their 30s because they're going to have to redo them at least twice. Nobody wants to do that.
Yeah, so that's why. But
you were really young to have that done. Even at 49, that's young to get a hip replacement.
Yes.
But glad.
So you want to make. Exactly. And just make sure that you stay healthy. Now that you have your pain free, it's really important that you maintain your weight, you're healthy, you do some cardiovascular activity, do some good strengthening exercises to really increase the lifetime of those hips.
Good luck.
Eat right.
Yep. Yeah. Keep fit. There you go, Roger.
Grantsburg's a great little town way up there in northwest Wisconsin.
Yeah. Thank you, Roger. Appreciate it. Well, what about you? A question, comment? Give a call at 800-642-1234 or email us to ideas@wpr.org. Jill Tine Nissenbaum, Lori Tine Brody, our guests. I'm Larry Mueller for the Ideas Network. Thanks so much for joining us today on the Ideas Network. Larry Mueller here taking a look at all kinds of physical therapy issues. We've zeroed in a bit on the butt, but we've taken some other questions as well with our two guests, Jill Tine Nissenbaum, Lori Tine Brody. Great to have them back. You know, Terry in Roberts, Wisconsin, had a question related to chiropractic work, and chiropractors have come up quite a few times already in the show. Terry and partner, have gone to a chiropractor in the past and had their necks cracked, which provided a lot of relief. But they've heard that this may not be safe. Terry's wondering if this is true or not. That's kind of a loaded question there.
It is. And I'll tackle it first, and then I'll let Lori chime
in.
Go
for it, Jill.
So every healthcare provider that you see should, and I'm pretty confident, will do a thorough evaluation on you and make sure that the treatment intervention that they are doing is indicated for you. So you need to assume that the treatment that they're doing is right for you. So having said that, there are people who Lori and I see in our practice, for example, who are systemically what we call hypermobile or too loose. And in that case, chiropractic manipulation would be contraindicated. The other thing you have to consider is, just like in physical therapy, chiropractors have specialties. Not everyone does high velocity thrust manipulations. They may do other types of movement or other types of approaches. So you just want to have faith or trust that your healthcare professional is picking the intervention that is appropriate for you. Lori, you want to jump in?
Sure. Also, if you are continuing to, regardless of what the specialty area is or the type of provider, if you are going to that provider over and over and getting the same intervention and you are not getting better, then it's time to seek out an alternative intervention, unless that provider can provide you with some rationale as to it typically takes, you know, X amount of time. So, for example, therapeutic exercise. Therapeutic exercise, in some cases, I call it the slow boat. You know, you will get better, but it's going to take you time. It's going to take time to strengthen those muscles. It, you know, typically at least 12 weeks to strengthen a muscle, to get noticeable strength improvements in a muscle. So when you start a strengthening program or you start a stretching program, you are not going to feel better in 2 days. It's going to take some time. So if you're going and you're getting manipulated and you feel better for an hour or 2 hours of the rest of the day, but then the next day you're back to where you were and you're seeing that pattern over time, then it's time to seek out a different intervention.
Yeah, there you go. Thanks for that question, Terry. Appreciate it. Maria in northern Wisconsin, thank you for calling.
Hi. I wonder if I could get some advice from you. I'm an 84-year-old female who had a right shoulder replaced a year ago in July. And since then, I have had nothing but problems with the shoulder. Are you there?
Yes.
Yes, we're listening.
Okay, sorry. I have been getting a lot of neck pain. It goes like from the shoulder right up to the neck, and it's just awful. I've talked to the physician's assistant about it, and I have really gotten nowhere with it. My shoulder, like the upper, like the around the ball of the shoulder, I have pain in the back. If I move my shoulder back, I get a lot of pain in it. And I'm just wondering if there is something I can do about it, because I'm so frustrated with the pain that I have in there.
Yeah.
Right.
Sure.
Have you had x-rays taken of your joint replacement since you've had it done?
No. I mean, the doctor who did it, I have absolutely gotten nowhere. And I don't want to go to someone else because I don't know if somebody else wants to even, you know, touch me because someone else did the surgery.
Oh, I think that's okay. I think it's time for you to see someone. This is a little atypical. Did you see a physical therapist after you had your total shoulder replacement?
Yeah, for about 4 weeks.
Okay. And you didn't have this pain at that time?
I had discomfort at the time, but I was told it was going to get better with time.
Okay, and it clearly has not. So, Lori, I think we need to have her see someone. So, what are your thoughts?
Yeah, I agree. And it's also not unrealistic that she has a secondary neck problem.
Right. Very true.
Well. So, I don't know that anyone has addressed that. So, just like the low back and the hip kind of overlap to cause buttock pain, the neck and the shoulder overlap to cause, you know, shoulder and upper quarter pain. So, you know, you're having this pain that kind of runs from your shoulder to your neck. Is it because of the position you were in at the time of surgery? Is it because of how you are moving or holding that arm postoperatively because it hurts? Is it because of a secondary neck problem that no one has looked at? So I think getting to the source of the problem is job one. So figuring out who you need to see to sort that out. And I would probably see, just politically, I'd probably go and say, I think this is a neck problem, and have somebody go look at your neck instead of going to someone and say, I think there's something wrong with my shoulder replacement. Because you're right, it sometimes makes people a little uneasy to look at someone else's work. And then they can say, oh, no, I don't think it's your neck. I think it's your shoulder or whatever. But yeah, I think Jill's right. Seeing somebody else to sort this out, you're in a lot of pain. It's been over a year. You should be better by now. So I would think seeing someone and saying, I'm having this problem. I think it's coming maybe from my neck, and going down that path and see where it leads.
Good luck. Thank you very much for calling. Appreciate it. Dick in Cumberland, your turn. Hi, Dick.
I've had a ruptured disc for a number of years. It had a reduction done about 12, 13 years ago. Some arthritis was taken out of there. I've got left leg nerve conduction. My left leg is not the same size as my right leg. The calf is smaller, the thigh is smaller, et cetera. I have constant low back discomfort in the area of that L4-5 area. Recent evaluation showed with an MRI or X-ray that there was no major nerve impingement, but I'm troubled by this discomfort. I have I've dropped golf. I've dropped a lot of exercising because I just keep irritating it. End up going into physical therapy, dry needling, chiropractic, etc. Nothing takes care of it. Occasionally, when the discomfort's bad, I take steroid bursts, but that's not a good answer either. So I'm kind of wondering, can that area be shimmed, or what's the cause of the discomfort? Because nobody up here seems to be able to find it.
Right. Well, it sounds like you have a pretty extensive history here, and you have that leg, it sounds like leg atrophy, so some muscle weakness probably as a consequence of the radiculopathy. Your MRI doesn't show any nerve impingement, but it, boy, sounds like there's something mechanical going on in your back. You said you'd tried dry needling with your physical therapist. Are you thinking, Lori, that he needs to be try something in the pool, perhaps be unloaded? Do you think that area needs to be unloaded?
So you had a nerve, you had nerve conduction velocity. Was that abnormal?
Yes, it was. I had a physician in St. Croix Falls look at that, and it is abnormal compared to the right.
Okay. So it could be residual from your original disc herniation. And you said you had surgery. They cleaned out the areas. Did you have a decompression? Is that what it was?
Yes, you know, in the L5 area. That's correct.
Okay. Did they fuse it?
No, they didn't. I went in because I woke up one morning, I couldn't feel my left leg from the hip on down to the toes. I turned over, it magically appeared, and that's when they did the x-rays and then found arthritis in that area, so they did the decompensation at that time.
Okay, and did you feel better after your surgery? Did you improve after your surgery in terms of your pain, or has this just kind of been constant for 12 years?
Well, no, it felt pretty good for a couple of years, but then it came back. I've gone to strengthening, did some strengthening in various clinics where they immobilize you and just strengthen, you know, areas. That never seemed to help. So I keep going from flare up to flare up to flare up, and nothing really seems to take care of it.
And when was your last nerve conduction velocity? When's the last time they did a study there?
In the last 3 to 4 years.
Okay. All right. And medications like gabapentin, anything like that help?
I don't take anything for it. I was on diclofenac 75 twice a day for a while, but retained too much fluid. And then I read some secondary drugs.
Yeah. Well, I'm wondering if your pain is because you had nerve damage. And you still apparently have neuropathy is what it sounds like. And neuropathy can give you this constant pain, and then your left leg is weaker, and strengthening does not change that. So that tells me that the wiring that goes to those muscles is not working. So you know, in terms of physical therapy, I don't know that there's anything to strengthen that. We tend to treat people with neuropathy with sort of pain relieving measures. There's various medications you could try. I see a lot of these people in the pool because they can exercise with less pain in the pool. But in terms of a mechanical problem that's fixable with surgery or other intervention, just, you know, in the few minutes that we've talked and hearing what you've said, I'm not hearing that. So if you haven't seen a pain clinic, that might be a way to go. Exercising in the pool might be a way to go. Many of the people I see with neuropathy take other medications gabapentin. Like gabapentin, and that helps with their pain so that they can be more active. I guess that's where I would land with this. Yeah.
Good luck, Dick. Thank you so much for calling. Sorry for your pain. Hopefully we can get you can get that corrected. Well, Jill Tyne-Nissenbaum is an associate professor in the Doctor of Physical Therapy program at UW-Madison. Lori Tyne-Brody is physical therapist and athletic trainer at UW Health Spine Physical Therapy Clinic. And they're going to be with us right up till 12:30 today. And so stay listening. We'll be back right after this look at the news, and we'll finding out what else is in store for us here on the Ideas Network. Number to call, by the way, 800-642-1234, or you can email us to ideas@wpr.org. I'm Larry Mueller. You're listening to the Ideas Network. Thanks so much for joining us today on the Ideas Network, taking a look at all kinds of physical therapy issues. Today on the show, we've zeroed in a bit on pains in the butt, but taking other questions as well from our two guests, Jill Tyne-Nissenbaum, associate professor in the Doctor of Physical Therapy program at UW-Madison, and Lori Tyne-Brody, physical therapist and an athletic trainer at UW Health Spine Physical Therapy Clinic. We have lots of callers online, so I think we'll just go right back to the phones, and let's hear from Marcia in Toma next. Hi, Marcia.
Hello. My journey has kind of been long. I broke my hip last June, and it wasn't discovered until September. In the meantime, they had done an MRI on my back, and they found some changes there, and I have had a back surgery before. So they honed in on that. They thought it was my back, and they were wanting to do a total spine fusion. And I said no. I needed to know if there were any other options. So they sent me back to a doctor who had done some spinal injections, and she asked to re-examine me, and it turns out that I had broken my hip. So for June, July, August, September, 4 months, I was walking on a broken hip. They did replace it in October of last year, but as I went through physical therapy, by February, March, it wasn't getting too much better, and I am stuck with a Trendelenburg gait.
Trendelenburg. Uh-huh.
Right. I cannot walk without my hip tipping. And I've done lots of physical therapy. I'm continuing to do my exercises, but it has not improved.
Hmm.
Is it painful?
Yes, it is. I have a pain in my gluteal muscles and a little bit down the side. And it kind of feels like there's a stone deep into my hip.
Hmm.
Yeah. That's... Again, given that they found, you know, a lot of issues in your back, it's going to be hard to sort out back from hip. You walked around with a fractured hip for 4 months. So there's a lot of stuff going on. Do they feel like they're unable to strengthen your hip? Is it that it's painful to strengthen it, or that they just can't get, that the muscles will not get stronger even when you try to strengthen it?
Well, that seems to be the pattern to me. I mean, I've been doing physical therapy since December of last year. now I'm kind of on a hiatus because I'm going to go see another orthopedic surgeon for a second opinion about what's going on. They did ultrasounds. They did find some torn tissue, and there was some bursa in there, which they injected. They did x-rays on my hips, and everything looks in alignment. I've had bilateral knee replacements. Those look fine. So it seems like I've just been in this holding pattern forever.
Right. Well, it sounds like they've ruled a lot of things out, which is good. But this is a really good example from Marcia of the whole interconnectedness between the low back and the hip. And here she was offered a spine fusion as a surgery when she had a hip fracture. So this is what we talk about, how challenging some of these things are. Are you walking with an assistive device at all, Marcia? Are you using a cane or anything to kind of even things out? You are.
I use a cane, and I'm using also a walker. They recommended I get off the cane to try to heal some more.
Okay.
But I do use a cane when I go out because it's not convenient to take a walker.
Sure. But what happens with Marcia here is that Trendelenburg gait causes you to bend sideways in your spine every time you take a step. So it just adds fuel to the problem, if you will, of you have weakness in your hip, but now every time you take a step, it's mechanically affecting your back. So it's just a really good example of the challenges with sorting through this hip and low back pain. I'm glad you're seeing another specialist. I think that's an appropriate course of care. I think Lori would probably love to treat you in the pool.
Yes, I would. You know, but when we think about all the things that can be going on in your butt, so to speak, it could still be stuff from your back, maybe. You know, they could try injections in your back and see if that resolves any of this stuff in your butt. There's a whole list of nerves and other muscles in there. When you walked around for 4 months with a hip fracture, whatever kind of secondary things you may have irritated or aggravated or damaged or inflamed at the time may still be there. And whether or not you can recover from those, we just don't know. So I think getting another opinion is a good idea. I think they've done a good job chasing this thing down. So it's not like they've passed you off and said, oh, it's just this or, oh, it's just that. They've tried several things and they've tried to knock off a bunch of the most common suspects on this differential diagnosis list. But they're kind of running out of things to try. And you have to decide how far you want to chase this thing.
Yeah.
In terms of therapy, Jill is right. I think the pool would be a great place for you to try to exercise. And one of the things that I really like about this is we can see if we can normalize your gait when it doesn't have all your weight on it. So we can unweight you. And it's not just treatment, but it's also in a way diagnostic, where we can see the problem is how much load gravity is putting on your joint. If we can knock a little bit of the gravity out and say, yes, this is a gravitational problem, or it's not related to that at all. So if we put you in deeper water versus shallower water and it's all the same, then we know that it's not related to that sort of that weight bearing phenomenon. And we have to look elsewhere as to the cause of the problem. So it's a great place to be if you can figure out a place locally to get in a pool.
Yeah. Good luck, Marcia. Thank you for calling. Justin in Middleton, Wisconsin, we'll go to you. Hi, Justin. What's on your mind?
Hi. So I'm a delivery driver, and I've been a delivery driver since about April. And around June, I started having a really severe pain in my butt. And now I'm having quite a bit of trouble walking while doing my job. I've also noticed in the morning I'll wake up with an extremely tight back, which will wake me up in the middle of the night sometimes as well. And I'm going to the doctor this week, thankfully, to hopefully find out what's going on. But I was just wondering if I could get a second opinion on it.
And you have pain that shoots down your leg?
Yes, It's from my butt down my leg.
Yeah.
So do you, is it your right leg?
Yes.
Okay. So, and are you seated in a normal truck? Or are you seated, is your seat higher? Justin, can you describe that? Are you in, you're in and out of the truck all day, I'm assuming.
Yeah, I'm in and out of the truck every 2 to 3 minutes. And it's a pretty high seat. And I also have a cushion that helps me sit up higher as well.
Okay. So, and the pain goes down your leg. Is there anything you can do to make that pain come into your back? In other words, is flexion worse than extension?
Not really, no.
Okay. How is it when you're not sitting?
When I'm not, if I'm just standing still, it's okay. But when I'm sitting, it's pretty painful. And then especially when if I'm walking or trying to go upstairs, it hurts pretty well as well.
I'm going to ask you another weird question, and then I can see Lori's little, the hamster on Lori's brain wheel is going. does it make a difference if you're in a car that's not your work truck?
Yes.
What's different about it?
So just sitting in my normal truck that I drive, my daily driver, there really isn't that much pain. I think that's just because I can stretch my legs out a little more than I can in this one.
Okay.
Well, that gave you a clue right there. So can you change and adjust the seat in your work truck? Because it appears as though the position of your sitting is causing you to load either something in your butt, could be your piriformis because you're sitting right on your sciatic nerve. And then if you're pressing on the gas and you're reaching, you're also stretching your sciatic nerve, but you're also stretching it through your butt, but you're also stretching it from your back. So if you can adjust your work truck seat to match more closely your personal truck, that can help with your symptoms.
The other thing I was wondering, Lori, is about the vibration. Because we know that vibration can play a role. And I'm just wondering if his work truck, if there's more bounce and vibration to it. And if you know, he said he had a little seat that raised him up. But I'm wondering if there's, mm-hmm. if there needs to be more of a cushion to deter the vibration. That was the only other thought I had with that.
Mm. Yeah, potentially. You know, but theoretically, if you're getting out of the truck every 2 or 3 minutes, that's better than the prolonged sitting.
Right. That's very
true. So that's, you know, that's a concern, and because you're loading and unloading, and typically that would be not so bad. So you don't have a wallet in that pocket, do you?
One more time. Sorry, I cut out halfway through.
Oh, that's okay. You don't have a wallet in that right pocket, do you?
No, I take it out.
Okay.
Yeah. Okay. Because that's the other thing is if you have something in that pocket on that one side, it's pressing on your piriformis and your sciatic nerve. So I can see you in some PT with some nerve glides, looking at your back and trying to sort out, is this a primary back problem or is it coming from something in your butt? And then we would direct the focus of your treatment there. And then we would look at your position in your work truck and mm-hmm. see if we can tweak that to eliminate the cause. Because treating the symptoms is only going to go so far. You've got to get at the cause of the problem, or it's just like a teeter-totter. You're back and forth. You're fixing it. Your work truck's making it worse. You're fixing it. Your work truck's making it worse. Make sense?
Yeah. Good luck. Thank you very much for calling, Justin. Appreciate it. Ed from Lodi says he's been experiencing lower back pain and right hip pain. He's wondering, besides physical therapy, can medications and acupuncture play a role in pain relief?
So medications and acupuncture certainly have a place for pain management, but really the mainstay of any good rehabilitation program is going to be physical activity. We know that exercise, whether it's cardiovascular, strength training, balance, Tai Chi, whatever, is really the mainstay of a good rehabilitation program. And then, of course, the education of teaching the individual kind of what exercises are best, what cardiovascular activities are best, things like that. But certainly acupuncture and pain medication, when dosed appropriately, have a place in the rehabilitation process.
Yeah, and not unlike our conversation with Justin, you can treat the pain, but if you don't treat the underlying cause, whether it's an inability to activate your core, whether it's poor body mechanics in terms of how you sit, how you transition from one position to another, how you move, how you stand, you're going to be in this constant, you know, just chasing your tail, you know, treating the pain and then how you move, what you do, weakness, tightness in another place are going to continue to produce pain. So at some point you have to break that cycle.
And Ed, appreciate that question for sure. Peter in Bayfield, we'll give you a chance. Hi, Peter.
Hello. You may have answered this question about four callers ago, but I decided to stay on. I have really bad peripheral neuropathy in my feet. I'm on quite a bit of gabapentin, and it still is bothering me. In the mornings, I get up and the whole lower half of my right foot and a little bit of my left foot are like, feel dead, almost numb. So I'm wondering if there's anything you could recommend to help with that.
Yeah. So, you know, depending upon the cause of the peripheral neuropathy, if there's anything we can do to address a cause of the peripheral neuropathy, then yes, there are other things you can do. If it's idiopathic, like a lot of peripheral neuropathy is, like we don't know what causes it. Sometimes people just get it. Then we end up primarily treating the symptoms. So I often see patients with this problem in the pool because they can exercise more comfortably in the pool, and the pressure of the water, the hydrostatic pressure, feels good on their feet when they're walking and moving in the pool. But other than that, it becomes sort of lifestyle advice, and that is how to exercise, what things are good, knowing when to stop, knowing what the red flags are, keeping your body weight in check so that you don't add another layer of musculoskeletal problems on top of your peripheral neuropathy and things like that. But other than that, the pain medication and any other things you can do to control pain, whether it's shoe wear, specific socks, compression socks, whatever. I don't know if you have anything to add to that, Jill.
I was just curious, Lori, you see a lot of people who are on gabapentin. Do they ever cycle off of it for a little bit and switch to a different nerve pain and then go back on it? Or have you ever seen that? I was just curious.
Typically not unless they're having a reaction to the gabapentin.
Okay. Peter, thank you very much for calling. Appreciate your call. And Rafaela, we'll go to you now. Thank you for calling from Wausau.
Hi there. I'm calling because for my husband's sake. He's been a window cleaner for a few years. He started doing that in April of 17, 51. And he's a lot of shoulder pain after a long day of work. And he does a stretch. It's like a door frame stretch where he doesn't lean into that, but instead he pushes his arm against that door to try to isolate his shoulder. Mm-hmm. And that helps a little. He sometimes puts a little ice on it, but there isn't really anything else that he's aware of. And I just wonder what the future is going to hold for him, and if you have any suggestions.
For sure. That's a very upper extremity dominant profession. I mean, you're wiping windows all day long. It's constant overhead activities. I would strongly encourage him to see a physical therapist to see if there are more specific exercises that your husband should be doing for this, and get him on some sort of like maintenance type of program to kind of extend the life expectancy of his shoulder, if you will. The other thing that always comes to mind for for me with these individuals is there is some, or they do look overhead occasionally. So when you're reaching up high to wipe those windows, so we want to make sure that his cervical spine has good mobility and that there's nothing coming from his neck as well. So I would think a couple physical therapy visits to kind of tease through what's causing his shoulder pain right now, kind of get that under control, and then give him a healthy program for both of his shoulders to extend this so he can continue with his livelihood would be a great idea.
Yeah, absolutely. This is his vocation, not an avocation. So it's going to be really important that he stays healthy. Physical therapists might also have suggestions on modification of how he does things. So for example, if your husband is right-handed and he always does his wiping with his right hand, there may be an opportunity to switch to the left hand, you know, every third window so that you're not overusing the same one. If he's wiping in the same direction, he may need to wipe the other direction, you know, wax on, wax off kind of a thing. So simple suggestions like that to prolong his ability to do this and make sure that he stays healthy.
Right. And I would love to watch him biomechanically do this at my house on my windows.
Can give him lots of advice then.
I can relate to that. I mean, just doing your own windows.
Yes.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah.
For sure.
Mm-hmm, yeah. Anytime we see people in these professions where there's repetition, lots of repetition with the same joint over and over, that is just a recipe for problems. So it sounds like he's already on his way. He's doing his isometric in the doorway, but he needs more than that.
Right.
So I think that'd be real important. I'm glad you called.
Yeah, thanks very much for that call. Jill from Greendale wonders if there's any exercises you can recommend for deep gluteal syndrome or if it needs to be diagnosed first.
So that's a great question, Jill. And I do think that it needs to be diagnosed first. So the deep gluteal syndrome is kind of the overarching umbrella. So in order to determine what in that posterior area, as we've talked about, is really the pain generator, you would really need a good examination by a physical therapist to determine what exercises are best for you. It might be a strengthening exercise for a muscle. It might be a mobility exercise to get a nerve moving better, maybe a combination of both with some balance. So deep gluteal syndrome is kind of like the overarching umbrella, and your diagnosis would be somewhere under that. And then with that diagnosis would come your specific interventions.
There we go. And on that note, we are out of time. The time's flown by, Jill and Lori. Thank you both very much for being with us once again. And you'll be back in about a month from now, and we'll do this all over again. And I hope we do hear from, I think it was Ann, you asked for her to let us know. Maybe she can call back in a month, and we'll find out what happened. Jill Tyne-Nissenbaum, one of our guests, associate professor in the Doctor of Physical Therapy program at UW-Madison, the other Lori Tyne-Brody, physical therapist and an athletic trainer at UW Health Spine Physical Therapy Clinic. Great to have them with us, and they'll be back in a month, and we will do this all over again with maybe a little bit different topic. Let's see, tomorrow at 11, best-selling author and Madison resident Chloe Benjamin comes by to share some ideas for creating a time and a place for your own writing practice. Then at 11:45, we're joined by the director of the Wisconsin Book Festival to learn more about the authors taking part in this year's fall event. Thanks so much for listening. Stay with us. Lots in store right through the afternoon on the Ideas Network. I'm Larry Mueller.